Hi, this is Paul Marks, host and producer of Multifamily Matters. Today we're going to air the best of Multifamily Matters. It's a very educational and informative episode, so listen and enjoy the best of Multifamily Matters.
Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, powered by the Multifamily Media Network and the only broadcast radio show in the nation that is solely dedicated to multifamily industry operations. I'm your host, Paul Marks, coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio, and we have a great show with a wonderful guest who's extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today we're discussing the topic of the top multifamily executive trends for 2024. Joining me in the studio is a sought-after industry speaker and a multifamily thought leader, the fantastic Dom Beveridge, principal with 20 for 20. Welcome, Dom.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
Again, yes. For the listeners that may not be aware, this may be the fifth or sixth year that Dom has come into the studio after he releases the 20 for 20 white paper, which is always so informative and kind of sets the stage for what people are thinking and what may be happening in the future, the trends, which we're going to talk about it there. But why don't you explain to our listeners a little bit about what goes into you compiling this 2020 white paper, which comes out right after the first of the year, within 50, 60 days after the first of the year.
Yeah, that's right. So the idea is that at the end of each year, I interview 20 senior leaders, so 10 COOs and 10 heads of technology, at as broad a representation of companies as possible. So everything from sort of public REITs to 5,000 unit owner operators to big fee managers. And I ask the same questions to each of the leaders that I interview, and then basically sort of synthesize everything that they told me into this document that kind of gives a nice little temperature check on, you know, what happened last year, what are people's priorities in the year to come. And yeah, each year it turns out some different stuff, some things that we weren't expecting. And what it always feels like is when the paper comes out, it sort of feels like the beginning of this conversation that mm-hmm. goes on for most of the year.
Right.
You know, it's really interesting to see how this stuff develops. But yeah, no, it's a fun activity, and sixth year.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about what you found out for 2024, some of the trends. Let's start with the revenue challenges. What are some of the trends you found in the report?
So the sort of overarching thing, and it's often the case that there's one thing that explains a lot of the other responses that we get. And probably the biggest single factor that explains more stuff than anything else this year is revenue, right? Mm-hmm. So a year ago, when people knew that the trading of properties was going to slow down because of the interest rate environment, they were preoccupied with like efficiency. Now it's more the top line than the bottom line that people seem to be preoccupied with. And it's because of this slightly weird set of economic factors that we have across the US at the moment, where although markets, you know, we're sitting here in Houston, Texas, you know, Sunbelt markets like these have really, really good economic fundamentals right now. Mm-hmm. There is just so much supply coming to the market that maintaining rent growth, maintaining occupancy, those things are very, very challenging for the foreseeable future. I mean, there's record delivery of product. I mean, the markets like, I think, Austin and Nashville, you've got the new supply coming online this year is something like 25% of all of the apartments in the whole market. Mm-hmm. So there's just so much product coming to market that you can't absorb that in a year, like readily. So what does that mean to operators? Well, any resident that's coming up for renewal during the course of this year is probably going to be being offered new products for the same price or less than the current apartment that they're in. That means that you really need to be focused on renewals and not closing the back door. But also, the pressure on rent growth. There are so many communities leasing up, for example, during the course of this year, the new rent growth is going to be hard to come by. So that's a really sort of complicated picture. It's one where we'll probably get deeper into this as we go through the rest of the findings, but it's making people prioritize the things that either protect or provide ancillary revenue that's going to help them with this problem, that it's just going to be hard to grow rent this year.
Yeah, and I guess the one of the questions is, did you get any feel for, besides rent being the major revenue generator, about the ancillary type revenue? Is there a movement or a desire to look for new ways to create that?
There certainly is. So if you think about things like managed Wi-Fi, for example, which creates a non-trivial ancillary revenue stream. So rather than splitting, taking a piece of a deal that a resident does with a retail provider, instead I'm going to become the provider of internet. So I'm going to take more of that revenue myself. That's a significant chunk of revenue that you're adding. And what you found is that if people had done some managed Wi-Fi, they were generally looking to do more in 2024, because that contributes very positively. You heard about people doing things like in-housing captive insurance programs, other areas where you've got the opportunity to sort of capture some revenue that you would otherwise have been paying to an external vendor.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of things that you see people getting much more interested in. Just given the pressures that we just described.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've got about 3.5 minutes left in this segment. Let's jump to another trend that you found, and this is something that we could probably go on for a couple of segments on, but it's fraud. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Well, I didn't expect to see this. It's generally the case that people have to deal with fraud a lot. Like it's come up over the years in these interviews. People who have properties in Atlanta, particularly high-end properties in Atlanta, tend to have to deal with a lot of fraudulent applications. People who are not who they say they are when they come to a community. But what's different now is that it feels like a nationwide problem. Like there are people across the market and there's a couple of factors that are contributing to this. One is, generally this has the characteristics of a pandemic hangover, right?
Right.
We know that eviction moratoria did a couple of things. One, it slowed down the processing of evictions in different jurisdictions. So the consequences of having a fraudulent application in your building are much worse than they used to be. It used to take a couple of months to evict somebody. Now it might take more than a year.
Mm.
So that's a lot of revenue. So that's one thing. The other thing, though, that I hadn't appreciated at all until doing these interviews was that the eviction moratoria also created this market for information on how not to get evicted. So you got all of these social media influencers who started to teach people how the law worked and what they could do to avoid eviction steps and so on. And from there, it's a pretty short step into, well, here's how you here's how you process a fraudulent application to a property.
Mm.
It's sort of scarily specific what they're doing. Like, you'll get people targeting individual companies. Here's how you get past this company's checks and process a fraudulent application. And in addition to that, you've got all of this. It's relatively cheap to buy from the dark web complete and very convincing packages of identity packages. Mm-hmm. So if you want to pretend to be somebody else, you can get hold of a pretty convincing set of documents. You've got people telling you which companies to or which properties to target. You've got people telling you exactly how to target them. We're now, I think, in a situation in multifamily where you need technology on the other side of that. Like, right. you can't protect yourself against that by just having people go through and check documents, for example. So this really feels like this arms race that's going on at the moment. It was definitely the most evaluated technology in 2023, and it's a really high priority, which it hasn't been historically. But yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I think a good way to think about it is if you're not actively figuring out how to stop people from defrauding you, right? Using any combination of the technologies that are out there, you're kind of like the gazelle at the back of the pack.
the slowest one.
right, exactly. Because you know, if the bad guys are sort of filing fake applications to figure out who's doing which checks, then they're targeting the fraudulent people at the properties that are least equipped to handle them. And I think that's how this is going to work until everybody figures out how to protect themselves.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. I can tell you that we did an episode, I recall, in the past where we discussed fraud quite a bit. and the guest told a story of at a property where one of the leasing personnel was in on it and was part of this gang of fraud. You know, it was terrible. I mean, it's terrible that we're saying. But all right, we're going to be back with much more right after these messages. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Multifamily properties' water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Elevate your apartment game with Multi-Housing News and their exclusive newsletters. MHN is the leading integrated resource for people and companies that own, invest in, develop, manage, and/or market multifamily real estate. Join the thousands of real estate professionals who trust MHN in their daily, weekly, and bi-monthly newsletters to keep them informed and inspired with property management trends, news, podcasts, and more. Find out more information at multihousingnews.com/subscriptions.
Looking for a solution to balance your assets? Tired of wasted time managing your day-to-day bookkeeping, buggy software implementations, inaccurate financials? Or maybe you're worried about a pending audit? Would you like more time to focus on revenue generating activities versus accounting administrative activities? Here at Balanced Asset Solutions, we are a CPA firm that specializes in property management platforms, including Yardi and AppFolio. You can reach Balanced Asset Solutions now at 619-415-6826. Go visit our website at www.balancedassetsolutions.com. Don't delay. Call Balanced Asset Solutions today.
We are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, powered by the Multifamily Media Network, coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone is a nationally sought-after industry speaker and multifamily thought leader, the fabulous Dom Beveridge, principal with 20 for 20. And we are talking today about the top multifamily executive trends for 2024. I do want to remind our listeners, if you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to the archived episode of Multifamily Matters, go to multifamilyradio.com. So, Dom, in the first segment, we talked about revenue challenges and fraud. And now, in this segment, I guess probably one of the most discussed or thought about topics in recent years, centralization. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So in the first segment, we talk about stuff that's pretty germane to this year. Centralization is something that is a multi-year story that's been playing out in the industry. It's funny, actually, tomorrow morning I'm off to California to take part in Funnels, the Funnel Forum out there. So I'm going to be spending much of the rest of the week getting deep into some centralization trends there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the thing that was a surprise 1 year ago when we talked about this was when we started to ask people more revealing questions about what they were doing in terms of centralization, it became very obvious that it was not leasing, it was admin that people were taking offsite more quickly, right? So the tasks that we associate with the assistant property manager, mm-hmm. so move in, move out admin, like accounting, collections, deposits, like all of that work. And this year, I think, if anything, that trend appears to have accelerated, right? So both leasing and admin are very, very active, and to a lesser extent, maintenance are very active in terms of people centralizing those sets of activities. But I think admin is moving so decisively towards being taken out of property. I think in a relatively small number of years, it's going to be strange to do that work at property, right? So you know, if we think about leasing, there's some element of leasing where you still need people, right? There are still always going to be some residents that you have to meet with or that you have to tour. It may become a marginal thing, but it's not nothing. With admin, though, there's actually no reason why that work needs to take place at property. In fact, mostly the reason why you still have you still have those roles at property is to do with coverage, right? It's to do with the fact that I need three people for my 300 units on property. It's not to do with the fact that this work has to be done at a property. And admin is different from the other other categories in that regard. The reason I feel fairly confident that that's where things are going is that we asked a different question this year, or a couple of different questions this year. So for each of leasing, admin, and maintenance, what we asked the leaders was, on a scale from we have decided not to do this through to we have already done it, like where do you place your progress with regard to centralization? And with admin, when we think about people who've already done it or who are in the process of doing it, there are far more people that fall into those buckets in for administrative functions than for the rest, right? So we know that the progress is fast. The other thing, though, that I think is really instructive is that nobody, out of the 20 people we spoke to, nobody has decided not to do it, right? So even with leasing, where lots of people are doing lots of really interesting stuff with leasing, I think there were 3 out of 20 people that we spoke to who said, look, we've had a good look at this. It's not for us. We're not going to do it. So I think leasing just has this characteristic where, you know, people talk about the UDR model, right? UDR seems to be at least the most public in saying how it's made everything self-serve. It's it largely doesn't use people in property-based leasing agents. If we take that as the most extreme example of a fully sort of centralized, fully self-serve leasing. And at the other end of the scale, you've got people that are not really changing anything about it. Mm-hmm. You're basically going to find everyone in the industry falls somewhere along that continuum. I think admin is just going off property. Candidly, it was never a particularly good idea to do that stuff on property in the first place. But you know that's just been the way that we've always done it. But I definitely see that changing. The other thing, just a sort of side note, is that when you ask people the question, have you changed your property staffing model, right? So that's a different question from have you centralized, because you're asking explicitly about whether or not the roles are changing and moving. Again, far more people have actually changed the composition of admin staff at properties. You know, moved the assistant property manager into a different, more centralized role. Far more people have done that than either of the other things.
Yeah, and I'm interested to know a little bit about the feedback you get, because a lot of the talk that people the discussions that I hear is it ever going to be possible to centralize the maintenance role? And you know, I'm sure it all depends on where your properties are located and, you know, how they're clustered and so forth. But what type of feedback did you get on maintenance?
Really interesting feedback. So a good way to look at this is in terms of the extent to which you can automate activities, right? So if you look at, you know, the three charts that we talked about, the one for admin, for leasing, and for maintenance, the admin tasks really lend themselves to being automated and moved to sort of specialist. You know, it's much better to have a specialist bookkeeper manage right. all of your properties than have, you know, 50 different properties with people doing bookkeeping part of their time, right? So it really lends itself to centralization. Leasing does as well to a great extent, but as we talked about a few moments ago, you still need some capacity to sell. And so if you think about a centralized model where the technology allows me to, you know, for example, share leads between properties, and it allows me to have a central support team to do lead nurturing, and allows me to do all of that kind of stuff. If my properties happen to be far away from one another, I still need somebody at property that can do leasing as at least part of their job. So it's like I have some constraints on what I can take off property in terms of leasing. I don't really have any in terms of admin. Maintenance, you are highly constrained in what you can take off property, because there's lots of things that you can automate that you can make more efficient. But at the end of the day, somebody has to come and fix the fridge,
right.
You know, or paint this wall, or whatever it is. So just because the tasks don't lend themselves, you can't. You know, there are great models where you can outsource some relatively simple tasks to residents. That's a good experience. Mm-hmm. Some residents just like prefer to call a help desk, and they'll send you the light bulb or the whatever it is that you need, and they'll talk you through how to make the repair yourself. Like, lots of people really like that. That's a good way of outsourcing stuff, but it's kind of at the margins, mm-hmm. right? You know, you're not mowing the lawn that way, or this other stuff that you do around the property. The thing that I think is different, I was talking to Jindo Lee, who I know you know from Happy Co, about this, and what I was saying to him the other week was, I think the thing that struck me about this year's research on maintenance is, I don't think anybody in multifamily is trying to centralize maintenance in order to change the 1-to-100 staffing ratio, right? So if you're centralizing admin or leasing roles, it's at least a benefit, and probably the main driver of why you're centralizing is that I want to move past this 1-to-100 staffing ratio that we've always had. You know, I'd rather have 2 than 3 people on property and have technology and central services do more of the work and so on. I don't see anybody doing that in maintenance. I don't think that's where the money is, right? The money in centralizing maintenance is about, really comes from spending less money with expensive resources, right? So a really good example, one leader said that they had, you know, they'd been regionalizing maintenance. So what a more centralized maintenance model tends to look like is, you've got a regional head of maintenance and all the maintenance people reporting to them rather than reporting into community managers. Mm-hmm. And what that means is, now you've got this ability to manage this pool of maintenance resources. That means you've got more opportunity to have specialized people. So maybe we have someone that just does HVAC, right?
Right.
And they're on our payroll, which means we don't have to pay the externals. The example I was going to share a moment ago is, one of the leaders said that they had employed somebody who just was a specialist appliance repair person. And he said, I haven't seen a single invoice for appliance repairs since we've made that change in the organization. And the thing is, those costs really mount up. I mean, you make the money, like, you know, $500 or $1,000 at a time, but it mounts up, and that's really where the savings are. You might be able to run with slightly fewer people. You definitely have a lot more flexibility in your model than you currently do, and greater scope for like specialization. But the money is not in cutting staff, really. The money is in saving money with the expenses that you don't need to incur.
There you go. All right. Well, we are going to be right back after these messages. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Application fraud in multifamily is a major challenge we're all contending with today, and the risk is ever increasing, making it more important than ever to strive for driving delinquency to 0%. If you could eliminate the worst form of application fraud with just a few clicks, you would, right? With PayScore, accuracy is everything. By automating income verification, they deliver clear, concise, and 100% bank-verified income reports in minutes. No more doubts, delays, or fraud. Just the truth about applicant income. PayScore. Accurate, easy, safe. Visit PayScore.com and start verifying with confidence. PayScore. Click, verify, relax.
REV, the multifamily leasing company, is the industry's long-term affordable leasing management solution. After all, it's really not about cost. It's really all about revenues. Book REV's expert directors and leasing career professionals for your properties today. Let REV drive revenues and create significant incremental value for you. Reduce stress, stabilize and maximize leasing performance. Never expend resources to recruit or train for leasing again. Lease up, value add, conventional leasing. Let REV be your long-term leasing solution. Go to revlmc.com to find out more. That's revlmc.com. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire REV today.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
We are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, powered by the Multifamily Media Network, and coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio. We are discussing the topic of the top multifamily executive trends for 2024. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me in the studio is a sought-after industry speaker and a multifamily thought leader, the fabulous Dom Beveridge, principal with 20 for 20. I do want to take a moment and thank some of our sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. REV, the leasing management company. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. PayScore, learn the truth about applicant income. HappyCo, multifamily solutions to smile about. And ControlByNet, providing multifamily video surveillance and remote guarding, solving your security needs. So, Dom, in the first two segments, we talked about revenue challenges, fraud, which is a huge topic, centralization, which has been on everybody's mind. But let's talk in this segment a little bit about what's changing about how people buy technology, because technology, I think, has been something that has always been on the forefront over the last, you know, at least 6 or 7 years with people. And when you go to conferences and you see all the new technology that's developed, and it's amazing to me that people are continuing to develop technology that does things that I never thought we needed to have done. But anyway, let's talk about it.
Well, the what was behind this question was, if I think back to 1 year ago when I was researching the 2023 edition, because everybody knew that the interest rate environment meant that they were going to be hanging on to properties maybe for longer than they would have expected to. People seemed to view 2023 as a year when they were going to sort of rationalize technology. They were going to look for efficiencies to save money, and so on. At the same time, I remember at NAA in last year, there were four different technology companies came to me to tell me about solutions that they were bringing to market in the arena of sourcing and procurement, like vendor management, that kind of thing. So it seemed like just this active area in 2023. So I just wanted to know what had changed about it, about the way that people sort of evaluate and buy technology. And what's really interesting, like frequently the most interesting things that you see in these interviews are the answers that tell you that you asked the wrong question. So with technology, that was definitely the case. I guess when you think about things in terms of evaluation of technology, I want to compare this widget against the other widgets and decide what widget I want to buy. That tends to be how vendors think about selling technology mm-hmm. to people. They always think about this sort of beauty contest like framing of for their products. And what you realize is, although that occasionally happens, it's very, very seldom the way that people actually buy technology at all. Mm. So when I asked people about what had changed about how they buy technology, like half of them said absolutely nothing. The other half, you know, it was either most of them said we sort of somewhat changed things, and it was mostly that we got stricter about the threshold for technology that we would even consider, right? So yeah, we talked at the beginning about revenue being front and center. Well, for many operators, we're only really going to prioritize things that have a positive offset, like stuff that's going to pay us revenue this year, or at least that's going to contribute some kind of NOI this calendar year. There was very little appetite for the sort of long term strategic projects that you that you often get several of in any given year. So you know, people were sort of gatekeeping technology mm-hmm. A bit more aggressively. But the sort of voiceover answers that people gave for me were much more interesting. So one thing is, people just reminded me that we're a real estate industry. And what that means in terms of technology is not all of the technology that I have is technology that I chose. Technology comes to us by way of properties that we acquire or partnerships that we have with you know, different investors that have different preferences about technology. So the aspiration for people who were trying to sort of change stuff about their consumption of technology, it was not so much we want to change the way we evaluate it. It was much more like we just like to get rid of some stuff that we already have, that we're already familiar with. Like if we can get to one vendor per category, that would be a really good that would be really solid progress for us. So again, you realize the evaluation thing is the wrong way to look at it. The other thing is, although there was talk of saving money when I asked people a year ago looking forward to the next year, like nobody was changing anything about the way that they about their technology stack in order to save dollars on technology. That's not the motivator. People who were looking to rationalize were primarily doing so because of the overhead cost associated with having more vendors in your technology stack, right? Every time you have another vendor into your stack, couple of things, like the technologists tend to say that every integration that you have has a support cost associated with it. The operators tend to look at it far more like nobody calls the vendor for support, like they call somebody in my organization. So again, every new technology that we roll out has this overhead attached mm-hmm. to it. And so we really want to be convinced that the benefit that we get from having an additional vendor in our an additional best of breed solution, we really want to be sure that the benefit that we get from that justifies the additional work that we have to do. And then the final thing that I'd say, sorry, is that when people tell you about their decisions to buy new technology in the last year, you realize that it's not so much that they're evaluating different competing solutions. Excuse me. It's not so much that they're evaluating these competing solutions. It's much more that they're thinking about what things can I change about the way my business works, given the prevailing market conditions. So if you think about renewals that we talked about earlier, this is a year when people really want to get better at renewals. Well, how do I do that if I'm an operator? There's many different, you know, I could price renewals differently. I could make the process of renewing better. I could get better at maintenance, because maintenance has a bigger impact than anything else on renewals usually. I have to pick which areas I want to focus on. And occasionally, the thing that I want to get better at sort of coincides with some piece of technology that I'm aware of. And that tends to be the way that people end up bringing new technology into their organization, not, okay, next week, let's get all the vendors of X in to present their stuff to us. So, I thought that was quite an instructive line of questioning.
So I'm curious, because you said initially, the way that you set up your research with 20 for 20 is you have 10 COOs and 10 CTOs. Mm-hmm. So were you asking technology questions of the COOs?
Yeah, no, we asked exactly the same questions.
So I'm just curious, when it comes to technology, which is CTO, that's their, that's what where their emphasis is. Did you get any surprises at all? Were there any differences between what the COOs said versus the CTOs?
The biggest one was one that I sort of touched on a moment ago, which is that the IT leaders tend to view the technology stack in terms of, as you add complexity to it, you add sort of technology related work, right? Mm-hmm. So if I have more integrations that I have to manage, that means somebody has to monitor them and make sure they're working and fix problems when they come up and escalate help desk ticket, just all of that stuff that you generally have to do with IT. Whereas the response to the same question from operators is much more that thing that I mentioned, which is, although we pay for support from these vendors, the reality is nobody calls the vendor when something goes wrong. They call someone in my team, and that just means they have to spend more of their day troubleshooting stuff that's ultimately to do with the technology. So again, people, a thing that people forget, and when I've been briefing people on this, people are often surprised when I mention this, but it's important to always remember that most of the software in the multifamily industry is made by either Yardi, RealPage, or AppFolio.
Right.
Like those three companies between them provide most of all of the technology that people use. And so when we think about new technology, the stuff that we tend to look at primarily at these industry conferences, the decision that people are making is I really like that technology. That does something that I can't get from my platform vendor. Is it important enough that I think it's worth bicing off the overhead associated with that with that new piece of technology? Mm-hmm. That I think that's much more the framing. And so again, it's very unlike the beauty contest that vendors tend to see in front of them.
Right.
It's much more
So the vendors could learn a lot from your report on how to approach when it comes to technology, because they think that people are going through a certain buying scenario, but that's not really the way it goes.
Well, yeah, I mean, I kind of make a living telling vendors these very things, but yes, you're right.
All right, well, we're gonna break it here. We're gonna be back with our final segment of this episode right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Control by Net provides communities with video surveillance solutions accessible 24/7 from any web browser or mobile device. Our remote guarding reduces crime in garages and mailrooms. Many top owners and managers already utilize our services and love the single sign-on feature to see all properties. As NAA and NMHC members, Control by Net only serves multifamily. Our cloud and managed video solution is consistently voted easiest to use. We meet any compliance requirements. Visit us at www.controlbynet.com or email us for a free site survey at crproperty@controlbynet.com.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Smart is a national multifamily research and analytics company providing market, property, and floor plan level data to track performance, evaluate competitive strategies, and identify potential investment opportunities.
Their innovative web-based software and mobile application contains extensive searchable inventory of granular historical data, floor plan by floor plan rents, concessions, and availabilities for enhanced analysis and forecasting. For more information or to sign up for a free trial, go to smartapartmentdata.com.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, powered by the Multifamily Media Network and coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio. We're discussing the topic of the top multifamily executive trends for 2024. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me in the studio is a sought-after industry speaker and multifamily thought leader, the awesome Don Beveridge, principal with 20 for 20. I do want to take a moment and thank some of our other sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible: Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties; Balanced Asset Solutions, CPAs with expertise in multifamily property management; DirecTV, the ultimate entertainment experience is now available to all multifamily residents; Smart Apartment Data, the most comprehensive and up-to-date intelligence on the multifamily industry; and CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. So, Dom, we talked in our first three segments about revenue challenges, fraud, centralization, and what's changing about how people are purchasing technology. Let's talk about one of the big elephants in the room always in multifamily these days, and that's AI. Mm. What did your study show about AI?
The progress of AI over the last year has been very interesting, because we had, this is the first issue of 20 for 20 that's been researched after OpenAI became available. So yeah. If you remember, there was this absolute explosion of interest in generative AI at the very end of 2022. So this was the first year where ChatGPT and tools like that have been available. If you remember the first half of last year, basically, I think all the way up to and including NAA, the level of hype was crazy. Yeah. I mean, you would have, by NAA, I think I wrote at the time, it just feels like every conference has new applications of this stuff since the last conference that you went to a month ago.
Right, exactly.
It just really, it really felt like that. Mm-hmm. And you would have been excused for believing that nobody would need to do anything anymore at properties because AI would be doing everything. And then by the time OpTech came around, it had really sort of died down. Like OpTech, I expected more of the same, and that's not what we got at all. So the thing that I wanted to know this year, I've always asked about AI in the context of the individual applications that people are using it for, right? So digital leasing assistants, collections, lead nurturing, like these individual applications that are a really good fit for AI. This year, I wanted to know a little bit more about how people think about it, just as a technology. I mean, I use ChatGPT very extensively now. Mm-hmm. It's very, very, very helpful for what I do. I'm very sort of aware of how powerful it is, but I don't see a lot of applications of it in multifamily. You've got I use it to write emails, or I use it to write web pages. Well, those are quite fringe uses for it, unless you're like a marketing agency that writes tons and tons of websites. Yeah. That's quite a fringe use for it in multifamily. It's a far more powerful technology than that. And it's a technology that doesn't want to stay in its lane. Like once it's solved one problem, it wants to solve related problems, which is something that we need to figure out how to embrace as this becomes more and more normal. So generally, I sort of wanted to know if do people think about this the same way that they think about accounting software or payment software or CRM, or do they think about it more in the way that you think about cybersecurity or data or something where you need a whole of business sort of strategy for how you're going to use it, how you're going to manage it, how you're going to manage the risks and so on. And what we found was that I think about a third of the people that I interviewed see it as something for which we need a whole of business strategy. about half said it. We just view it the same way we view other technologies, and the balance of respondents said it's just too early to even have an opinion on any of this stuff. So a couple of things I feel you can say quite confidently. One is that most of the applications of this currently are in customer-facing things. You know, I mentioned some of them earlier: digital leasing assistance, collections, increasingly things like renewals, maintenance request handling, like that kind of stuff. That's where most of the AI is currently deployed in the industry right now. And everybody thinks that stuff you're supposed to buy from specialist vendors. So nobody's working on the problem of, well, how do I use somebody else's large language model, like a ChatGPT, right, to come up with our own widget that talks to customers. Like nobody's thinking about that right now. The few companies that are thinking about how they use OpenAI and LLMs like that are thinking about it exclusively in terms of the back office. All right, so one really interesting use case, probably the most sophisticated company from this set of interviews, was already testing using chat based on OpenAI to handle IT help desk requests. So it's things like that. So it's always with internal audiences, so it's a bit safer than having it actually face customers. But yeah, the automation of accounting related stuff, invoice processing, just these kinds of tasks seem to be the things that people are most interested in figuring out how we can address that. And in that regard, it seems to me that the adoption path for generative AI looks a lot like the adoption path for centralization, right? So centralization, you remember a couple of years ago, it's all leasing was the focus of everything. And it's the same. It's all customer-facing stuff is where all the technology is that people are buying right now. But when people apply themselves to, all right, how am I actually going to change my organization? The first problem they gravitate towards with centralization was admin, right? Mm-hmm. Let's take this set of high friction, relatively low value add, but very, very necessary activities and have them done in a different way, have them done in a more efficient, more specialized way than they currently are. Well, you can now sort of see a path where step one is we start to centralize these admin activities. And step two is they become increasingly automated using things like OpenAI, which just by its nature we're going to increasingly be able to configure to do things exactly the way that we want it to, like rather than being something that we completely outsource to vendors. I can see that being the path being the path that companies start to go down, and a path down which they might start to accelerate quite quickly. But for the most part, the stuff that's customer facing is very much like outsourced to the providers of those technologies right now. It's very much the case that multifamily leaders are looking to vendors to tell them how to solve those customer facing problems.
All right. Well, we're going to transition to something else, but before we do, I'd want to let our listeners know that I've mentioned previously in the episode, Multifamily Matters is powered by the Multifamily Media Network, which you can find and listen to Multifamily Matters as well as other great multifamily content and podcasts. Go to multifamilymedianetwork.com to check it out and make sure to subscribe to the weekly newsletter that keeps you informed of the latest and greatest from the platform. So, Dom, I know you've got coming up a webinar that I saw an announcement on. Talk a little bit about that. How can people sign up for it? Obviously, if they go to our website at multifamilyradio.com, there will be a link to your website on there on this episode page. But talk a little bit about the webinar, what it's all about, and what you plan to cover, as well as what else is going on with 20 for 20?
Yeah. What's that? So I forgot to say earlier, congratulations on the launch of the Multifamily Media Network.
Yeah, thank you.
So no, that's very exciting. The webinar, it's a new thing that we're doing this year. So the people that make the annual edition of 20 for 20 possible, right, we have typically five or six sponsors each year who each contribute articles to the white paper. The new thing that we're trying out this year is, we're going to get that group of supporters together, all six of them, to go over some of the topics that we talked about today. So you'll get a different perspective on these, like from people who are out there delivering technology. Mm-hmm. So the companies, let me not forget anybody, but we've got AppFolio, we've got Airbnb, we've got Demuso, so that's payments, we've got Reba, so that's
revenue management
and business intelligence. We have Elise AI, and also we have Level M, which is the company that used to be Dwello, so smart technology. So what I like about it is we've got pretty much the gamut of technology providers, and they are going to be giving their own perspectives on some of the major themes that came out of this year's research. So I'm excited to do that. Anyone who's interested, probably the easiest way, if they obviously they can go to your website, but the easiest way to find the link to register is to just search for 20 for 20 on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. There's a post on the profile that has a sign up link on it. That's next week. That's Monday the 1st at 1 o'clock Central, I think.
Yeah. And what else is going on with 20 for 20? What do you got coming up? I know you've been involved in, because we did an episode on the pricing scenario. Talk a little bit about what's happening there.
So on the same day next week, actually, I'm taking part in a debate about revenue management with the guys from Transforming Cities. It's funny. There was a conversation that started on LinkedIn a few weeks ago, where there's this view that revenue management is problematic because XYZ, but XYZ nearly always is a misunderstanding of what revenue management is for. So we're going to delve into that for an hour or so. We have a big audience for that one coming up, so I'm excited for that. But yeah, revenue management, unfortunately, it's election year, so it's kind of open season in some states on revenue management and the people that do it. So I dare say I'm going to continue to be talking about that. But yeah, there's a bunch more content coming down the pike. We're going to be diving deep into fraud, because I know it's sort of the biggest, the most active area of technology that people are looking at right now. So that's probably the next thing. But yeah, always lots of new stuff coming out on the site.
All right. Well, when you're ready to talk about fraud, you've got an open invitation to come back for that.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.